everyone. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. It is my show. I'm so glad to be back with you. Recharged after a few days of taunting fish in the mountains. They never bit. Well, I'm back. The phone number, if you would like to call in, is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Ben and Jerry's has just announced in the last 2 hours that they're going to stop selling ice cream in occupied Palestinian territory. Essentially, they're joining the BDS movement, the, what is it, boycott, divest, sanction movement against Israel. They don't want to sell their ice cream to Jews anymore, which is nutty and ridiculous. Meanwhile, Rashida Tlaib is out there slandering the Israelis, claiming that they're bombing the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is just vile. Why is Israel attacking Al-Aqsa on Eid al-Adha, the holiest day for Muslims? Why attack people who are literally kneeling down to pray? Answer, to continue dehumanizing Palestinians even in prayer. It's not enough to bomb them while they sleep or demolish their homes. Oh, good grief. It's not actually true, but she's doing that anyway. The left. Remember, these are the people who are now starting to think maybe we need to be violent about climate change. Maybe we need to start blowing things up for climate change. That's going to cause a backlash, very much like defund the police movement caused a backlash. And what's so interesting now is that in the past, the media really did have a monopoly. This is something that I really do think has a lot to do with the anger and frustration voiced by people in the press and in government about misinformation and disinformation. Is when I was a small child, there were 4 television networks in this country. There was ABC, CBS, NBC, and PBS. Sometime when I was living in Dubai, growing up in Dubai in the 80s, Fox TV, not news, Fox TV became a thing. Now, cable started out sometime in the early 80s, I guess, and CNN launched at some point, and then Fox News launched as cable began to take hold. But for the longest time in the United States, you had ABC, CBS, NBC, and PBS, and they were all liberal. Dan Rather, and before him, Walter Cronkite, were liberal. Dan Rather is a liberal. Peter Jennings was a Canadian who became very pro-America, but his worldview was definitely of the left. Tom Brokaw was definitely of the left, socially. It's gotten worse today. PBS was always of the left. You did not have Rush Limbaugh until the late 1980s and then into the early 90s after the end of the Fairness Doctrine. So for the longest time, the media had no competition. When Rush Limbaugh took off in the 90s, you had numerous media outfits demand the end of Rush Limbaugh, demand the end of his ability to be on radio. You had the demands for the return of the Fairness Doctrine, because the media did not like the competition from Rush Limbaugh, who literally, I mean, it's a ratings-based business, people. A lot of people say, he didn't really have 15 million listeners. It's a ratings-based business. We got ratings in radio. I know what my ratings are. I would put it to you this way. Y'all are listening to the show in syndication, but I am now in Rush Limbaugh's spot on one of the largest talk stations in the country, if not right now, the most listened to talk station in the country. That would not be so if I didn't have the ratings. Ratings matter. Ratings matter. And Rush Limbaugh had a massive audience. And the media heaps scorn on Rush Limbaugh, particularly after Newt Gingrich and Republicans in 94 credited Rush Limbaugh with helping the Republicans take back Congress for the first time in 40 years because there was alternative programming to ABC, CBS, NBC, and PBS. Fox TV has never had a World News Tonight. Fox News or Fox TV never had a newscast. I always wondered why Fox News did not push Bret Baier's, the first 30 minutes of Bret Baier's show onto Fox's TV outlets like World News Tonight and the other channels news outlets, but they never did. And Rush Limbaugh, it was the competition. Well, then Fox News took off like a rocket. And now they don't even talk about talk radio. You don't hear people, even before Rush passed away earlier this year, you rarely heard CNN and MSNBC, ABC, CBS, NBC, and PBS attacking Rush Limbaugh anymore. It was all Fox News because they got competitors now and they don't like the competition. And so much of the angst and antagonism towards Fox News is antagonism toward a competitor. They make it sound very highbrow, but really it's about, we've got this network eating our lunch, providing counter programming. But here's the thing, even with that, television viewership is down. People go elsewhere for their news and information. And so who's the bad guy now? Facebook. I personally think that Facebook does things they should not do. But I also think that a lot of the anger that conservatives direct towards Facebook is misplaced. There is legitimate grievance, I think, for conservatives to be had at Twitter, but less so at Facebook. And yet a lot of people lump Facebook and Twitter together, where Facebook gives way more latitude to conservatives than Twitter ever did. Twitter willfully stamps out people. Do you know if you go on Twitter and you call Bruce Jenner, Facebook will turn off Twitter. Twitter will turn off your account. Facebook will let your account continue. Twitter will shut your account down if you call Bruce Jenner, or if you point out that it's a man baby. To quote Austin Powers, Facebook will let you do that. Twitter will not. But the media hates Facebook for a number of reasons. One of which is because the media, when Facebook was coming along and billions of people were using Facebook, the media said, hey, let's use Facebook to get the word out. And Facebook was not as into them as they were to Facebook. A lot of them pivoted to video because Facebook said it was going to concentrate on video. So they fired a lot of people, hired a lot of people, and it didn't work out. And the media blames Facebook more so than anything else for wrecking their business. So they hate Facebook to begin with. In 2008 and 2012, the media was running hagiographic portrayals of Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook because Barack Obama was able to connect to voters on Facebook and get them out to the polls. In 2016, Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton at that. Now, you need to understand, this is a part of the story that's left out. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump both had Facebook representatives willing to help them. The Facebook has been very open and transparent that they had staff who were willing to work with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump in order to help them make the most of Facebook. The Clinton team refused. The Donald Trump team said, let's do it. And they won. And now Facebook is the enemy. Facebook is the enemy for allowing news on Facebook that may be misinformation. But CNN and MSNBC have spent 4 years saying the Russians stole the 2016 election, which itself turns out not to be true. And yet they're mad at Facebook, not themselves. Why is that exactly? Why is that? It's because it's never been about misinformation. It's never been about disinformation. The news networks themselves are expert purveyors of misinformation and disinformation. You know, back in 1992, there was a story that defined the Bush versus Clinton race. George H.W. Bush was the president of the United States, and he had been the ambassador to the United Nations. He had been the chairman of the Republican Party. He had been the ambassador to China. He had been the head of the Central Intelligence Agency, and then he became vice president of the United States for Ronald Reagan. He was president of the United States, and Bill Clinton's message was, George H.W. Bush is a patriot and a nice man, but he's been in the Washington bubble for so long, he can't relate to real people in our economic situation. And a writer for the New York Times covered an event that George H.W. Bush went to. The event was a trade show for the National Grocery Store Association. And the writer, Andrew, what was his name? George H.W. Bush, grocery store, New York Times, Andrew, what was his name? Yep, here we go. Here we go. This is the story. It comes up. Andrew Rosenthal, that's it. Andrew Rosenthal wrote this story about George H.W. Bush. Visiting the exhibit hall of the National Grocers Association convention here, Mr. Bush lingered at the mock-up of a checkout lane. He signed his name on an electronic pad used to detect check forgeries. If some guy came in here and spelled George Bush differently, could you catch it? The president said, yes, he was told. Then he grabbed a quart of milk, a light bulb, and a bag of candy and ran them over an electronic scanner. The look of wonder flickered across his face again as he saw the item and price registered on the cash register screen. This is for checking out? Asked Mr. Bush. I just took a tour through the exhibits here, he told the grocers later, amazed by some of the technology. Marlon Fitzwater, the White House spokesman, assured reporters that he had seen the president in a grocery store a year or so ago in Kennebunkport. Some grocery stores began using electronic scanners as early as 1976, and the device have been in the general use in American supermarkets for a decade. Having sampled the ways of the American shopper, Mr. Bush tried to identify with the American bad mood. This is a column written by Andrew Rosenthal at the New York Times from 1992, that George Bush was amazed by a grocery store scanner that were common in grocery stores. And the Clinton campaign, whose whole message was that George H.W. Bush was a nice man, but had been in a Washington bubble so long he couldn't relate to people anymore, used it. That what? George Bush doesn't even know what a grocery store checkout scanner is? But there is a problem. Andrew Rosenthal wasn't actually there. Andrew Rosenthal never saw it. Andrew Rosenthal picked up the wire story from the one reporter who was there. There was one reporter from the Houston Chronicle who noted that it was an unremarkable event that the grocery store scanner that George Bush was using was one that was not out yet. See, the grocery store scanner that George W. Bush used that day was one that was not on the market at the time. It's the one you and I are familiar with now, where you can put your produce down and it's got a camera and can scan that produce and weigh the produce right there to make sure you're not shoplifting produce and figure out what the produce is and how much it costs. Those weren't actually available. Those are the self-checkout scanners. They weren't available in 1992. They literally did not exist on the market. But Andrew Rosenthal and his reporting confused it with the ones that you and I are most familiar with, the ones that the cashiers use. And he wrote the story that way, and the Clinton team seized on it and used it as a way to depict that George W. Bush was out to lunch. The headline used was Bush encounters the supermarket, amazed. They never corrected the story. They promoted Andrew Rosenthal to be the editorial page editor for the New York Times. He got the key parts of the story wrong, and he wrote it as if he was there. You would have never known that Andrew Rosenthal wasn't an eyewitness to this. And you would have thought, based on reading what Andrew Rosenthal wrote, that George H.W. Bush had seen a cashier scanner that was very common, when in fact it was something that wasn't even on the marketplace yet. Something that would not actually be common and on the marketplace until around the year 2000. And the New York Times is upset with Facebook for misinformation. And the New York Times thinks Facebook needs to be regulated for misinformation. Maybe first we should regulate the New York Times. Oh, but wait, they say. They have the First Amendment. Well, guess what? So do the people writing on Facebook. The unknown came to the workplace in 2020 and things have changed. Everybody's looking to work out of their house, so they want a great chair. I found a great chair. The X chair. It's at the forefront of home and office settings during this transition. And X chair's newest innovation, the Elimax temperature regulation, will take your sitting comfort to a whole new level. There's a patent pending for the Elimax. It allows you to experience cooling, heating, massage in your lower back while you're working. You're feeling stressed out from the Zoom calls, the Microsoft Teams meetings? Turn on Elimax massage therapy. X chair's patented dynamic variable lumbar DVL support was already the best in class, and now you get Elimax. Imagine regulating your body temperature and getting massage therapy while you're working. It really is a fantastically comfortable, well-designed, well-put-together chair. Go to xchaireric.com right now. That's xchaireric.com or call 1-844-4XCHAIR to save $100 off your order. XChair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort, and you can finance your purchase for as little as $30 a month. Go to xchaireric.com now or use code XWHEELS for free X-Wheel blade casters. xchaireric.com. Hello there. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. A buddy of mine reminds me of a controversy I was, to some degree, too young to even have paid attention to. But this gets back to the comments of the White House on taking information off social media. Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, had this to say about Facebook.
Well, I would say first, it shouldn't come as any surprise that we're in regular touch with social media platforms, just like we're in regular touch with all of you and your media outlets about areas where we have concern, information that might be useful, information that may or may not be interesting to your viewers. You all make decisions just like the social media platforms make decisions, even though they're a private sector company and different, but just as an example. So we are regularly making sure social media platforms are aware of the latest narratives dangerous to public health that we and many other Americans are seeing across all of social and traditional media. And we work to engage with them to better understand the enforcement of social media platform policies.
And one more.
You shouldn't be banned from one platform and not others if you are for providing misinformation out there. Taking faster action against harmful posts. As you all know, information travels quite quickly. If it's up there for days and days and days, when people see it, you know, it's hard to put that back in a box. And of course, promoting quality information algorithms. I don't know how they work, but they all do know how they work. So those are some of the steps that we think could be constructive for public health, for public information, for public and, you know, the right of the public to know.
So Jen Psaki believes Facebook has a responsibility for misinformation. The president said that they're murdering people. He came out about 30 minutes ago and said, actually, they're not murdering people. The people who they allow on their platform to spread misinformation are causing people to die. Should Jen Psaki be banned from Facebook for spreading misinformation and disinformation? When the Hunter Biden story came out from the New York Post, she was one of the very vocal voices that said it wasn't true and claimed it was Russian disinformation. Turns out the story was true. Twitter, you will recall, turned off the New York Post's account for publishing the story. Facebook let them alone. Should Jen Psaki be banned from social media for spreading misinformation? She said it was Russian disinformation, but it was the truth. Should she be banned? So this buddy of mine reminds me, back in the late 80s, and you're going to have to forgive me if you have kids present here, back during the late 1980s, as the country's awareness of HIV and AIDS expanded, there was a huge, huge controversy in the medical community about what to advise gay men. And the use of condoms was actually not the preferred strategy. They were split between just being careful and knowing your partners and not engaging in sexual activity at all. It was actually the prevailing consensus for a time that the advice should be to abstain from any sexual activity if you were gay, because we didn't quite know what was causing AIDS at the time. Would the use of a condom then, the advice of that been spreading misinformation? Because it was actually the advice that they settled on. But for a time, believe it or not, in the 80s, that was actually the advice they didn't want to give. That was the advice considered to mislead and possibly harm people. And yet that's the prevailing consensus today. So if Facebook were around in the 80s, would they have banned people for saying use protection when having sex? Because that was what the health experts were saying could lead to harm. You know, Justin Amash, the former congressman, said that a lot of people who talk about misinformation, what they're talking about is information that becomes the norm, but at the time is considered to be a lie because society hasn't awoken to the fact. I mean, think about all the people who said that the Wuhan virus came from a lab. who were accused to be racist last year. And now actually it's the prevailing consensus is, yeah, it came from a lab. How do we separate misinformation from information we just haven't gathered yet to realize is true? They can't do it, but they want to. That's the problem. Gosh, a friend of mine just sent me this Perimeter Mall. It's just north of Atlanta, Georgia, is where I normally shop. I take my kids. An armed suspect was shoplifting in a Macy's, went outside. When security tried to detain him, he opened fire. Thankfully, he missed and was detained. But gosh, this is becoming more and more common. Meanwhile, there's some breaking news happening, particularly for those of you who are in Georgia, but everyone really. Different governors and folks are trying to come up with ways to deal with city crime when it's often a city issue. But the governor of the state of Georgia just met with the House of Representatives here in Georgia and said he's going to call a special session in the fall to deal with the crime issue. In particular, he says he wants to allocate money for additional state police and other issues to fight measures. And House Speaker David Ralston in Georgia says he wants to approve an additional $3 million to pay for 20 additional state troopers and to double the state's gang and human trafficking task forces to focus on the Atlanta area. Good for them for going forward with this issue. We're going to have to spend some money on these issues, I'm afraid. In fact, real quick, I was reading the paper. So I live in Macon, Georgia. In Macon, Georgia, I was on the city council in Macon, Georgia for a while. Yes, I used to be elected and I was on city council. It was the worst job of my life. Gosh, I tell people all the time, if you want to run for office, don't run for city council. It's terrible. I mean, it can be good, but local politics is so much nastier than national politics. It's like academic politics. Academic politics is the worst because none of it really matters, so it's always the nastiest. In local politics, most of it doesn't matter, so it's really terrible. But. In Macon, Georgia, they got a ton of money. They got like $18, $19 million from the federal government for COVID relief, and they're actually going to use it to fight crime. Because, you know, I mean, the Democrats are saying the crime is caused by COVID, so they decided to allocate the money to fight crime. And one of the things they're doing that I think is genius is they're basically going to bulldoze a bunch of property. Bunch of private property, they're going to bulldoze it. It's abandoned properties. A lot of people, they rent out houses, the houses deteriorate, they stop renting them where they've inherited them, they collapse them, and they're being used by gangs as refuge for drug dealers and criminals. They're where crime comes from. If you were to overlay where a lot of the crime happens and where a lot of the blight happens, it is a one-for-one overlay. And so they're going to bulldoze all these houses with the money. They're going to hire more police. They're going to put in some mental health clinics in poor neighborhoods. But a lot of it is they're going to tear down the blight. And that's actually a great solution for a lot of places. So, you know, one of the things that people say, oh, you're so dogmatic. Well, one of the issues that I changed my mind on when I was on city council, I was not a big fan of government funding of a lot of programs like museums. I don't understand why the government needs to fund the museum. If you can't keep it open with private donations, close it. And one of those that I was rather dogmatic on was an after school program called the Booker T. Washington Center. It was in a poor neighborhood in Macon. And I was like, why are we paying to leave open a facility for kids after school? It just seemed kind of dumb to me. And a member of the city council who could not stand me, who referred to me as Eric KKK Erickson, and I'm not making that up. She would refer to me as Eric KKK Erickson. In fact, her home burned down and my wife cooked supper for them. They were having to stay in a residence inn while their home was being rebuilt. And after my wife made dinner for them, she referred to me in the newspaper and said that she was not surprised. I had a blonde-haired, blue-eyed Hitler baby for a son. That's her actual quote, that I had a blonde-haired, blue-eyed Hitler baby as a son. She was not surprised by that. This is the sort of person I was dealing with. But nonetheless, I was on a city council with this person, and so I figured I needed to work with this person. And she came to me one day, and she told me I was wrong about this Booker T. Washington Center, and she brought the chief of police with her. And he was able to show me a direct correlation between when that place is open and when it's closed and crime in that neighborhood. And when the Booker T. Washington Center is open in the afternoons, crime in the neighborhood is down, and when it's closed, crime is up. Why? Because kids are going to the Booker T. Washington Center, and they've got tutors there to teach them, but also they got a basketball program, they got an athletic program, they've got a playground that the kids can play on, and if they're not doing that, they're getting up to no good when their parents are still at work. And that data metric convinced me that, you know what, we should fund this. It's actually a crime prevention tool to keep this place open, and we have funded it ever since. I was willing to be persuaded by the data. Now, a lot of people are not willing to be persuaded by the data. I was. We got a crime problem, and I got to say, I'm not a big fan of the Speaker of the House in Georgia, but the fact that he wants to add more money for state police and gang and human trafficking task force is a good idea, and hopefully they will do it the sooner the better, because there's a real problem in the metro Atlanta area with gang violence as being one of the major forces for crime. You know, back in the day when I was in Macon, before I got on city council, there was a mayor, and he solved the gang problem in the city of Macon. In fact, the former mayor, before I was on city council, actually was able to get gang violence to zero in Macon, Georgia. It had never been done, and yet the prior mayor was able to do it better than anyone else. He was able to get rid of gang violence. And the way he did it was he disbanded the gang task force. So there was no gang crime to be reported, even though it was still there. It's very much like a precursor to what the San Francisco district attorney has done out there by no longer enforcing or prosecuting crimes. They can say crime has gone down. In Macon, Georgia, that's what the old mayor did, is he just got rid of the gang task force. And since there was no gang task force investigating gang activity, there was no gang activity in Macon, Georgia, even though there was everywhere. You could see the spray painted graffiti everywhere, but no, we don't have a problem. The gang task force isn't even there anymore. It's what we're dealing with. Which, you know, is a great transition into vaccine hesitancy by people. I'm actually intrigued by this one. The American media would prefer to blame Trump supporters and shame them instead of actually trying to convince people to get the vaccine. Now, I got to lay this one out for you. I got to say this up front because I always get angry mail from people who selectively hear what I'm saying. I think you should get the COVID vaccine, but I don't think anyone should make you get the COVID vaccine. I think you, me, and everyone else will be better off, because I do think that as the virus continues to spread, it mutates further, and we can lessen the mutations that may get around the vaccine by getting as many people vaccinated as possible. But I don't think anyone should compel you to. I don't think you should be bullied into it. And I think it is your choice. And I think if you get COVID and die, you took the risk. And you may regret it, but it's your choice. It is your risk assessment. And I think the burden should be on you. I think that the government should, instead of shaming you and bullying you, should instead allow people to come out and make the case to you that it's in your interest to get the vaccine, but in doing so should not talk down to you. The way I have been able to convince friends of mine who were hesitant to take the vaccine was very simply to say, I took it, my wife took it, our kids took it. And we know for certain that my wife was exposed to COVID after she got the vaccine. And she did not get COVID. And my wife has lung cancer. And had she gotten COVID, it would have been very bad for her. I was exposed to COVID after getting the COVID vaccine, and I did not get COVID. And I think the vaccine works. I think there's overwhelming data that shows it works. 99% of people hospitalized in America today who have COVID don't have the vaccine. 98%, I think, is the last number I saw. 98% of people who have died of COVID in the last couple of weeks are people who didn't have the vaccine. That if you get the vaccine, you may still get COVID, but the odds of you getting a hospitalized case or dying from it is slim to none. In fact, you've got those Texas state representatives who fled to Washington, D.C., and five of them have gotten COVID, and they're all asymptomatic except for one or two have very minor symptoms. I wish people would get the vaccine. I think it's safe. You know, the difference between an experimental vaccine and a licensed regular vaccine is someone at the FDA saying so. That's it. And they're going to say so soon enough. Enough people have gotten it without side effects. And I realize there are people who say, well, I'm not worried about side effects now. I'm worried about the side effects 10 years from now. Well, I would rather the opportunity to worry about those side effects than being dead from COVID. Now, a lot of people on the other side will say, well, it's got a 99% survivability rate. And you're right. So again, no one should make you get it. Take your chances. The risk should be on you, though. I don't understand why I have to wear a mask in my office or a mask on an airplane at this point. And you and I both know, we can see the writing on the wall that overwhelmingly what we are seeing is governments now trying to continue this mask mandate, and they're trying to stretch it beyond COVID, which I think is ridiculous. Now, see, here's the thing. I just got an email. You really shouldn't be advising people to take the vaccine. We have no idea what the long-term effects are. It is not researched, nor can it be researched. And this is irresponsible on your part. Please stop. Actually, you know, we can. And that's one of the misunderstandings and bits of misinformation that's out there. Why? Why can we know? Because with the mRNA vaccines in particular, all they do is they fool your body into thinking that the protein that's on the outside of the COVID vaccine is in your body. That's it. It doesn't do anything else. It triggers your body to generate an immune response thinking your body has been infected with COVID. Because, you know, if you see the little COVID molecule, it's got those little things that stick up from it, like little hairs or something, or like little golf tees on it. Those are protein. And they're all the same protein. And so what the mRNA vaccine does is it injects what appears to be that protein into your body, and it dies within 48 hours. And the result is your body thinks, oh, I've been invaded by a virus, and because it sees that protein. Well, COVID has the same protein. So when you do get COVID, your body generates a response. Because it's already generated the response to the mRNA, it now generates a response that you don't even know it's generating because you've already had it before. To say that we can't determine the long-term risks and effects of this is actually not true, because the mRNA, this is the genius of the mRNA, and I'm not talking about Johnson & Johnson. I wouldn't want to take the Johnson & Johnson one, but the Pfizer and the Moderna one, mRNA dies within 48 hours. This is scientifically confirmed. It dies within 48 hours. Your body then builds up an immune response to it in that 48 hours before it dies. That's why people, if they get sick from it, get sick within 24 hours, because your body's building the immune response. But I've got people who are emailing me, and I know they mean well, that it can't be researched. It's irresponsible on my part. Please stop. It's actually very responsible for me to debunk this stuff, because a lot of the people are getting this stuff from people off the internet who pretend to be experts and really aren't. It's very much like they're listening to the same doctors who say that transgenderism is perfectly biological and normal. You've got the anti-vaccine people as well. It's all the same subset. They've got their own experts, all of whom are crazy, and they listen to them, and they think they're real because they're telling them what they already hear. I mean, I'm sure the person who emailed me this had already thought this through, that we don't know the long-term consequences of taking this vaccine. And so then goes on the internet, and there's someone who's a PhD or an MD who says the same thing. Aha, see, I was right. But it's not actually true. Now, I don't want to shame people. I don't want to bully people. And unfortunately, too much of the media is bullying people, is shaming people, is badgering people. I do think, though, that we should be honest, and we should recognize there are a lot of people lying about it online. Some of it from partisanship, some of it because they just don't trust the government, some of it because they're skeptical of the science, and I get that. My bottom line point, though, is that like this person who just emailed me, if this person doesn't want the vaccine, don't get the vaccine. I want y'all to know I got it. I'm perfectly healthy and fine. So is my wife. So are my kids. My kids have had it as well. And we've been exposed to COVID, and we haven't gotten COVID. My wife has with lung cancer, has been exposed to COVID after the vaccine and did not get COVID. It could have been terrible for her had she. And the vaccine saved her life. We know that. There is no dispute on that. Her doctor is so excited by her immunity thanks to the vaccine. But I don't think we need to condemn people for not getting it. And too much of the media and the left want to condemn Trump voters. They don't want to condemn the minority voters or it's just the white Trump voters. It's all your fault, apparently. And that's no way to convince people that they should do this. In fact, I think it's counterproductive. And I think that the burden of risk is on you. And the burden of risk should not be on me. And anyone and everyone who is out there should be able to live their life, take their mask off, and do whatever they want. And if they get the virus, they get the virus. But that's their choice to not get the vaccine. It's their risk. Stop making the rest of us, though, be held hostage by the people who have the burden of risk. It's on them. It's not on me. I did what I needed to do. Let us all live our lives and let the chips fall where they may. Now, before I get out of here, I got to remind you about Eden Pure. They got a great deal right now. You can get a 3-pack of the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. You guys are telling me how much you love them. They eliminate odors in your house. They really do a good job of eliminating odor, but they also eliminate black mold, mildew. That they eliminate that stale smell sometimes you get in your basement. And right now you can get 3 of them. You can save $200 on a 3-pack of Eden Pure Thunderstorms. You'll get 3 units for under $200. You can have 1 for the basement, 1 for the first floor, 1 for the second floor, all with this one purchase. The Eden Pure Thunderstorm is small enough. You can fit it in your hand. It plugs directly into your wall. It doesn't take up floor space. And you don't have filters that you have to keep replacing. No filters. It is filterless, and it works. It really does. You guys have been raving about them. It handles pet odor, kitchen odor, tobacco odor, the damp smell lingering in your basement. It handles that as well. I had to put one in a rental car because the rental car smelled bad, and it helped in the rental. It really helped in the rental car, and I didn't get charged with smoking weed in the car as a result. Not that I did. It was the person before me. But the Eden Pure knocked out the odor. It does a great job. What you do is you go to EdenPureDeals.com, EdenPureDeals.com. You'll see my name on the front page. You click it. You go through and you'll see 3 of them. Now, don't freak out. You'll see the total cost with the 3. Add them to your cart and then click the orange checkout button and you'll see a box for a discount code. You put ERICK3, the number 3, ERICK3, no space, ERICK3 in that discount code and you will suddenly save $200. You will get a 3-pack of the Eden Pure Thunderstorm and save $200. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. The discount code is ERIC3. You can thank me later. HR can just be overwhelming when you start your business. I know. I run a small business, this radio show and podcast. It's a small business. And HR manager salaries, they're not cheap. An average of $70,000 a year. It can overwhelm you with all the regulations and everything else. That's why you should use Bambee, B-A-M-B-E-E. You get a dedicated HR manager, you can craft HR policy, maintain your compliance, all for $99 a month. With Bambee, you can change HR from your biggest liability to one of your biggest strengths. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, by email, by real-time chat. From onboardings to even terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day-to-day, all for $99 a month. Month to month, there are no hidden fees. You can cancel at any time. You didn't start your business because you wanted to spend time with HR compliance. Let Bambee do it for you. Get a free HR audit from them today. Go to Bambee.com/Eric right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's Bambee.com/Eric. Spell BAM, BAMBEE.com/Eric, ERICK.
This is an example of what we're dealing with. Someone just sent me an email and said that the inventor of the mRNA was on a podcast and said it can cause all sorts of problems. The problem is that the person, Robert Malone, is not actually the inventor of the mRNA vaccine. He was a scientific researcher who helped develop a means of transferring an mRNA vaccine, but not actually the mRNA vaccine. That itself was developed by a lady named, Caitlin Carrico. And Drew Weissman are the inventors of the mRNA. And there's just so much out there that's not true that people are believing. And a lot of this stuff is easily debunked and I get it. I'm just trying to correct the record for people who have heard a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff online. Believe it or not, a lot of what you hear online, it's not true. And then they get mad at me for pointing out that what they believe isn't true. They get really upset about it. And all I'm trying to do is make sure that they have the truth. And again, if you don't want to get it, don't get it, but I do think it's worth debunking the mythologies that are growing up there out there about the vaccine, because the vaccine actually does work. And we should be applauding the science and President Trump, frankly, for Operation Warp Speed.